Welcome in, Loons fans, to another week of the Match Day Preview. Jonathan Harrison here, joined once again by Chief Development Officer Manny Lagos. Manny, no Minnesota United action this last weekend. So how did you spend your weekend off of Minnesota United action?
Oh, I had a very fun dad weekend. I went to go see my son, who is a sophomore at Duke, play a game against Pitt in the ACC spring season game. So it was a nice weekend to get away.
Nice. What was the turnout for the game?
It was actually pretty good. 2-1, they won in PKs, and it was a good ACC game. Very physical, very tough. And like I said, for a spring game, it was a good crowd.
Awesome. How much MLS did you partake in this weekend?
A decent amount. You can never not get away, and particularly right on these weekends when you're out playing. It's kind of a different vibe because obviously you're so focused on our game. So there's a good way of just following games. Obviously, we had the U.S. team playing as well. So it was a weekend of sports combined with my travel, because we also had the NCAA basketball tournament, which I enjoyed following as well.
Your bracket busted yet?
I did not do a bracket this year. I got it in too late. I know the club did. So I didn't do a bracket, but you know, I'm still following it.
There you go. All right. So we talked about the little bit of the MLS. We got plenty to talk about here. We got a crazy weekend in Major League Soccer. We've got international friendlies and competitions to wrap up, and then previewing Philadelphia, which we'll do later on in the show. Which game stood out the most to you this weekend? Plenty of high scoring action across the league. Plenty of crazy antics across many of these games. Which one took your eye this weekend?
Well, I'll start and I'll let you kind of throw some out to me, and maybe we can kind of debate them. I mean, obviously the Philly game is the biggest one for me, because away at Portland, who's, you know, started pretty sharply, and just them going there and getting their first win of the season before we play them. They're going back home now with a little bit of confidence. They haven't won at home yet, and I'm sure we'll do that more in the preview. But that game probably popped the most for me.
Yeah. The one that popped the most to me is LA Galaxy continuing to be one of the early talks of the season. 9 points now after a come from behind win in Kansas City on the road. Not an easy place to play. And 3 goals in the final 20 minutes, or 3 goals in 8 minutes, to come back and win that one kind of stood out to me. Another one that stood out was New York Red Bulls 4, Inter Miami 0. I know no Lionel Messi, a couple other big names gone from their squad, but still, that's a shocking scoreline to see when you see Inter Miami, one of the preseason favorites, lose 4-0 in a game.
Yeah, I think great shout out for both those games. I think there's no doubt the resiliency that the Galaxy have shown, we haven't seen for several years. So usually when they get down, they struggle to get back into the game. They tend to leak more goals and can't quite figure out a way to get a point or 3 points. So really impressive start for their season, and just kind of them trying to have a rebuild. And I think you're exactly right. I think that 4-0 Red Bulls wasn't close. I mean, those guys were on them from the beginning and really had a great comprehensive performance. A Messi-less team. But again, I think with Miami having so many games and having so many competitions, if they want to be the elite of this league, they're going to have to figure out how to compete week in and week out in a league that's tough. And ultimately, you know, you're training in the heat, and then you go up to this windy, rainy Northeast. You got to be ready to play. And I think they weren't ready for a really good kind of Red Bulls team right now.
Yeah, LA Galaxy just seemed like a team that is going to have to win in some old school MLS ways, where there's going to be a lot of goals. There's going to be not a whole lot of defense, because they've given up 9 goals in their first 5 games here. And it's not a good defense performance, but they keep showing out offensively despite that defense kind of letting them down at the back.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, if they don't think about how to stop leaking the goals, I think that'll turn a little bit and they'll start, not playing as well. But again, that was pretty impressive. Down 2-0 in that 10-minute spell where they scored 3 goals, really, I think, has given them kind of some belief and confidence that they're evolving as a club from where they've been the last couple of years.
The other game that stood out to me, just because of where both these teams generally are in the standings in the Western Conference, San Jose 3, Seattle 2. And Seattle's just off to a very poor start to the season. Obviously, a ton of injuries on their end have really hampered what they wanted to do early on in the season. And Seattle's one of those teams that we always know tends to start off slow, but then they get hot throughout the season and find their way into the playoff race. But this just feels a little bit different, doesn't it, with how the injuries have hampered them and with the way they've started, especially losing to a previously winless San Jose team this last weekend.
Yeah, I want to I want to say that, but I've said that before about Seattle, and they have figured
we all have.
It out. But there's no doubt they're missing players like João Paulo that I think really kind of sets a tone for them, you know, physically and kind of the two-way soccer that they need to be successful. And there's no doubt. I mean, it's officially a slow start for them this year for the type of team that they've been in the past. And, you know, it's always hard to go to a team like San Jose when they're winless in the year and they're hungry to get the win. But it also, I think, was indicative of Seattle's not playing great soccer right now. And I think it was a fair scoreline from how the game went.
Yeah. LAFC 5 after getting held scoreless in their previous three matches. It seems like all those goals finally started to come out this weekend against Nashville. Bad performance for Nashville, but 5 goals for LAFC. Maybe they're getting back on track. I mean, with the rumors of the signing of Olivier Giroud coming up in the summer, that's a big addition for them. Seemed like Minnesota's 2-0 win a couple weeks ago may have lit a fire under LAFC.
Yeah, I got to watch a little of that game, and I got to tell you, I think they came out pressing in a way that I hadn't seen them press since their first couple years in the league.
Yeah,
it was suffocating. It was much more intentional, that it wasn't just a repress or try to get waves of attack in the middle of the field. They really, from the get-go, smothered any opportunities for Nashville to play out, to get going. It was by far their best performance, I think, in over a year, to be honest. And they really, probably when we were there and we got hurt by them last year, is probably the last game I've seen that type of performance. And, you know, obviously Bwanga getting off the mark, and just they had an energy that was probably for their coaching staff a great response to what I thought was, you know, a lackluster performance against us, which I give the credit to us, by the way. But certainly they really played an outstanding game at a tempo that really suffocated Nashville.
So a fun weekend in Major League Soccer last weekend, a fun weekend ahead, which we'll get into in a little bit. But I want to go back to one of the main topics that we talked about last week with Jimmy Conrad when he was a guest. U.S. Men's National Team three-peating the CONCACAF Nations League. An excellent game in the final, obviously a little bit of a rough going in the semifinal. I want to really focus on that final. That game was impressive from the U.S. from a standpoint that we've talked about, and it's becoming more of a topic of the U.S. taking over CONCACAF and kind of vaulting above Mexico. But they really showed that they are the better team in this region this weekend against Mexico in that final.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun podcast to do, and it's fun when you do the post-podcast and you kind of have the theme about how Mexico doesn't have any stars right now, that you can't quite tell what their identity of how they're going to play and win against good teams. And then to have the U.S. kind of fight through Jamaica, which was just an unfortunate goal in the beginning that really made it a complicated day for us to get to the final. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at the rosters, we're better than Mexico right now. Our roster is a better roster. We are favored to beat Mexico when we play them at this moment, which is pretty cool. And again, I can't remember a time where I think a roster for Mexico has, you know, some solid players, but no superstars. You know, Chucky Lozano's a quality player, but I wouldn't consider him like kind of the folklore of Mexican stars that sometimes make it hard for the U.S. to handle and get the result. But I just felt like nothing was in doubt the entire game. And really just a great performance. Like I said, we've got a great group of core players now that I think even rotating players were able to really handle a Mexican team right now that I think is still trying to find their identity.
Is Gio Reyna the best player in the U.S. pool right now? Because you saw his impact in that Jamaica game, coming on late and really helping to create those goals. And then him really just bossing that game against Mexico the other night. It feels like he's, despite what he's done at the lack of what he's done at club level because of his circumstances there, whenever he gets into the U.S. team and plays, he's incredible to watch.
Yeah, I just think we've got a great core of players that are playing at some really big clubs throughout the world now. And they really are important pieces to this group to build to be a competitive team, both in Copa America, but also in the World Cup. And I think what I like is we've got a young, very talented, unique skill set player that's still growing into both how good he can be, but we also need his qualities and touches to be really good on the field for us to really break down teams and really kind of spark our kind of offensive output on the day. And so for me, It's exciting because I think Gio Reyna is still growing into what he can be, both on the field and in terms of what he gives offensively. But more importantly, he's still growing into learning that this career is tough. You know, soccer's tough. There's a battle here that you've got to have a work rate to get to be able to be the Gio Reyna. And I think he's still going through that process on the club level. And I think it's only going to benefit over the next year and a half, hopefully, a player that could potentially be incredibly important for us to make a run in the World Cup in 2026.
He'll be important this summer as well in Copa America. Did this weekend, with how they performed in two very different games, like we said, it was a tough night against Jamaica, going down early to an unfortunate goal and then having to find a way to break through in the final moments of that game and then into extra time, and then completely bossing Mexico off the field in the following game. Did that change what you saw from this weekend? Did that change what your expectations for the club is, or for this nation is, at Copa America this summer?
I don't think it does. I think we're on our home turf, and we have I think we mentioned this before, we don't have young national team players anymore. We have experienced, right at the right age, national team players that are hopefully building a core of every game, whether there's rotating of certain players or rotating of systems, or some players are informed their club, so they're going to play, that make us very competitive. I think that makes us very dangerous in Copa America, because we have now a core of players that have played consistently together now for 3 or 4 years. And I think the expectation is getting closer and closer. It doesn't matter who we play. We should be battling. We should be making it hard for the other team to play against, and we should be able to create chances. So I think it just reminded ourselves of the work that the national team has been doing over the last couple of years. And we should be excited for Copa America to see where we're at against better competition than what we just had.
Yeah. This weekend, also, Canada and Costa Rica booked their tickets to the summer's Copa America. So we'll probably maybe have some loons represented at Copa America in Dane St. Clair and Alejandro Brown. That's exciting to see. What does it mean for those two countries to make this summer's tournament?
Oh, so excited for them. Yeah, obviously, Costa Rica has a lot of pride of playing in international tournaments, and they've always performed really well. And, you know, having Abraham at the age he is just incredibly exciting, because it's an opportunity for him to grow and learn, hopefully get a lot of playing time. If he doesn't, even he's still in and around the thick of trying to battle against elite competition in this hemisphere. And then certainly for Canada, I think, couldn't be happier for Dane, could be happier for the growth of that club and where Canada is. You know, they kind of remind me of the spell from 1950 until 1994 that the U.S. went through before it really started to kind mm-hmm. of dive into really competing international competition at the highest level. And now Canada is really starting to solidify, you know, since 1986, when they kind of had the drought up until the last World Cup, that they now want to be one of the powerhouses in CONCACAF, and they want to now compete in their international competition. And Dane's right in the thick of that core of players. So like our guys, all the guys who traveled international break this last time, I just couldn't be prouder of all the Loons players that are representing their countries. And it's really cool to see the footprint of our club all over the world this international break.
And Canada fell into one of the toughest groups in Copa America, with Argentina, Peru, and Chile with them. That's about as tough as a group as you're going to find in Copa America. I mean, the U.S. have Uruguay, Panama, and Bolivia as well, but that Canadian group in Group A is going to be tough.
Oh, yeah. We all know about Argentina. I thought Chile looked really good against France in this break. I got to watch a little bit of the game, yeah, a little bit of the highlights. They competed well in France. They really almost had a draw there, which is really impressive.
You don't have to wait for spring training to start playing the beautiful game this year. Minnesota United has a full slate of academy and youth camps scheduled throughout 2024. Show off your skills, take your game to the next level, and enjoy some quality time on the field with MNUFC's licensed academy staff. Visit the camps and combines page on MNUFC.com for more information. Yeah, absolutely. It should be a fun summer for soccer across the states. So let's jump into the preview for today, for this weekend's game. Philadelphia hosting Minnesota United. early start time for us, 1:10 p.m. kickoff. Rematch show starts at 12:30 p.m. on 1500 ESPN. You can watch the match on Apple TV as well. You can also listen to us on 1500 ESPN and the mobile app for 1500 for Score North. Plenty to talk about here. Philly still undefeated in league play, just like Minnesota United. Finally got their win, as you mentioned, a 3-1 win in Philadelphia this weekend. A confusing start for them, I guess, with the three draws, getting the win this weekend, getting that off. To a start there for them. What do you think of what they've been able to do this season in Philadelphia?
Well, obviously the CONCACAF journey ended earlier than they wanted to for the expectations, I think, of that team and the roster that they had. And it probably hit them harder the way they went out 6-0 against Pachuca, which to me was a similar team, to be honest. I thought they were pretty even, the two teams. And so when you have a scoreline like that, which is very fair, it wasn't like, you know, they scored three goals in the 89th to the 95th minute. They got beat 6-0 probably within 65 minutes of that game. And then you are domestically trying to shuffle lineups and figure out how to compete in MLS, and that it probably was a blow. And in confidence wise, it was a big win for them in Philly, because I think they wanted to take a deep breath and to remind themselves what they are. And ultimately what they are is a really tough, hard physical team. So I think their win, and now coming back home, we should expect, you know, a team that's hungry to be physical, to get their first points at home and really come at us. I mean, this is going to be a great game this weekend. It's going to be a great battle. I mean, I'm excited for our guys. Obviously, we've had a great start. And the only way for us to really, you know, get through this weekend with a result is being ready to play.
Yeah, absolutely. They got a ton of talent across the board in various different age profiles. Obviously the academy is the focus for a lot of people recently, with Sullivan being signed by Manchester City. He'll stay with the club for another 4 years, according to reports. So plenty to talk about there. We'll get into the academy side a little bit. I want to talk about kind of the keys to this matchup for Minnesota, trying to get the better of Philadelphia. The last time these two teams played was the first game of the 2022 season. It was also Bonhukle Hlongwane's debut for the club as well. Came on in the latter moments of that match. Robin Lode scoring in the 23rd minute. Oliver Burke, I believe, scoring in the 35th minute, if I'm remembering correctly.
Good memory.
Looked it up beforehand, but I also forgot the minutes there for a second. But yeah, it was a 1-1 battle, an exciting game to start the season. A couple years ago, that was the last time these two teams faced in Philadelphia. What's the key for Minnesota this weekend?
Yeah, I mentioned first, I think it's got to start with their mentality. I think we've got to be ready to match them physically. I do think it's going to be a battle, and I think that there's no doubt they're going to come with a lot of energy, like I said, to try to get their first win at home and their first kind of like winning streak, because they won last week. So I think we have to limit our mistakes. There's no doubt that that mentality is important. Having said that, though, I think we've got to get after it. You know, they have leaked some goals. If you look at the Portland game a little bit more closely, I thought in the first 20 minutes, Portland should have had two or three goals. And, you know, they weathered some posts. They weathered some missed chances where Portland really could have taken control of that game and probably picked up their confidence, because then they scored some goals. So for me, it's reminding ourselves, as we get that mentality of battle, that we attack them, that we get hungry to get forward, to get chances when we're playing well and we have our shape. And then I've said it, I think, since week one, it's another opportunity where I think we can win the midfield. You know, ultimately, I think it's going to be interesting to see where Philly's lineup ends up, because the international break and they had some players missing, they shuffled their lineup and they played really well and won on the road. So I'm not sure where they're going to end up with what type of midfield, you know, if they're going to go back to Bedoya or if they're going to go back to Martinez. It'll be interesting to see. But ultimately, I think for us, that's an area of the field we've been outstanding. And to really win that battle, I think winning that midfield this weekend is massively important.
You just mentioned Bedoya there, and he's his leadership has been key to that club for a number of years now. And I think we've talked about it a couple times on this podcast of what some of these guys who are on these winning teams, what they mean to the squads, the Christian Roldans. I put Alejandro Bedoya in there as well. Just their leadership, what they're able to do, especially in the midfield. What does he mean, and what's the value of his leadership for Philadelphia over the years?
Yeah, it's a great comment, Jonathan. I really like it, because ultimately, you've got this 36-year-old player that is playing for this club that has a lot of young players, but they really have a balanced roster of age-wise, you know. Excuse me, they've got Carranza at 23, Ure 29, Godzak 28. So they've got this mixture of that, and they got Sullivan and McGlynn at 20. And Bedoya just provides that great leadership. And that's where I really have a lot of respect for Philly. They have a great balanced roster of experience and youth, and then kind of guys in their prime. And they're hard to handle. You know, they do have a style that's very unique and very tough to play against. So Bedoya has no doubt been kind of a cog in all of that. Like I said, it'll be interesting to see if he'll play, because sometimes the level and tempo they want to play, his legs aren't quite up for it. But he tends to, when he's in there, helps them find ways to win. So I think Jim Curtin has some lineup questions himself off of the win last week versus guys coming back from national break about how he's going to put an 11 out there. But just thinking of Philly, you know, I kind of mentioned those offensive guys, and I think they've got some stalwarts that have been there for years on defense. You know, Blake is considered obviously a top five goalie. Elliott and Glasnost have been outstanding pair for many years. And then Kai Wagner has kind of been a revelation at left back for them for a long time now. So this is a legitimately tough team year in and year out. One of the better teams in the MLS and in the East for sure.
They're so solidly built. As you said, that back line was going to be my next focus. Is it seems like they've been together for years at this point. As you said, Glasnost, Elliott have been the center back pairing, and Baizo on right back, Wagner at left back. That back line, knowing that they've been together for so long, how do you take advantage of a back line that's been together, that's played together, that knows how each other play for years at this point?
Yeah, I think we have to unsettle them. I think at the end of the day, I think I mentioned the mentality of battling doesn't just mean winning the midfield. It means when we get our opportunities, getting after them, making sure that they're not going to be comfortable in the fact that they might be complacent because they've played together for a long time, and making sure that we don't just go on the road with the idea that, you know, we're going to try to limit our mistakes and play cautiously, but we play with an idea that, you know, we're going to create our chances and we're going to take our chances and we're going to make it a tough day for them. And again, this kind of environment is tough because, like I said, they do really well at home when they really try to dictate the tempo and dictate the style they want to play. So it's really important, I think, to unsettle those guys and make sure that they're in for a long 90 minutes right away and make sure that they don't get a level of confidence that kind of take over the game.
They have a style of play that they've really honed in on under Jim Curtin's reign there. And he's one of the longest tenured coaches in this league for a very good reason. He's shown his skills at developing teams, developing youth, and meshing that the youth and the veterans together really well. They play in this style. They have this diamond midfield. What's the key to taking advantage of a diamond midfield or playing against a diamond midfield? Is it playing around them, playing through them? How do you go about attacking a midfield that looks like how they set it up?
Yeah, I do think it's simplifying the fact that we've got to win the 50-50s. We got to control the ball. We got to create the numbers in there. We're in good spots. We keep the ball so we can get it wide to Bongi. We can get it wide to Sengbin. We can find Pukki and get good service. So to me, it all starts with us really, winning the 50-50s and then winning the fact that we should have more numbers at times in the middle, and then how we build out of that. And then ultimately defensively, how we're making sure that they're not controlling the tempo through getting physical. We make it hard for the play between the lines and really, you know, in a good way, hopefully make their defenders use the ball more so that diamond doesn't get effective going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's jump into the academy, since they seem to be the talk of the town right now, with Sullivan going to Manchester City at some point here in the next couple of years. They've really found a way to hone in on the academy system and make it really work for their organization. You got the Aronson brothers now both playing in Europe. You mentioned Jack McGlynn. Got Quinn Sullivan up with the pro team with Philadelphia right now. His younger brother, his 14-year-old younger brother, Phenom, labeled one of the best 14-year-olds, if not the best 14-year-old in the world. First of all, what makes this kid so dang good and so sought after that Manchester City are willing to go out and reportedly spend a lot of money on them to come in 4 years from now?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He profiles as one of the best 14-year-olds in the world, which is really a great credit to Philadelphia. It's a great credit to MLS that, you know, the academy work and the things that we're trying to do are kind of like starting to show that we can actually kind of produce high level talent at certain age groups. This doesn't mean that he's for sure going to make it, but it ultimately is really cool that you have a kid like him who's profiling at such a high level at such a young age. And I think a lot of it has to do with a little bit different than Quinn in that, you know, he's, you know, Quinn's more, a little bit more glidy and, you know, dangerous winger. He's got a little bit more ability to break lines with his passing or with his explosiveness. He's a little bit more, I would say, you know, he's got an explosiveness with his technique that really can break lines with passer dribbling. He's a great finisher. He really is, you know, profiled to be a really good finisher as well. So it's exciting. Ultimately, you don't know where the journey goes. It just started for him professionally this week. But it's really exciting that I think when you have the mothership hat on, that you had a situation where a big club like Man City looked at what the development pathway for him, and it's to stay in Philadelphia. It's to be a part of what we're trying to do in terms of the league-wide development model here, and then see where that goes after 16. He might go earlier. He might stay till 18. But ultimately, I think it's a great kind of story for the week, for the work that the league has been doing. And then specifically Philadelphia. Ultimately, you know, they've been doing this a lot longer in the academy world than we have. And they've had a lot of missteps over the last couple of decades to do this academy. And I think they've done a great job of adopting and learning and growing. I think Sullivan and Glenn, for our fans this weekend, are great examples. These guys are 20 years old. They do not look like young players. They look like men out there. Yeah. So it's really impressive that Philly has those type of young players meshing with these kind of older veterans I just talked about seamlessly with ease. And ultimately, I think that is somewhere where a lot of the teams and us, our goal is to kind of model where we build our academy as a key part of us being successful and winning, key part of us, you know, kind of building great players, hopefully professionally for Minnesota United, but also for the global soccer game itself. And it's exciting to see a club like that. I would say it's going to be a little different than here. I always say, you know, Philadelphia has the uniqueness of the competition with DC United. And I think there's some great kind of competition to push those two academies. The situation would be better. And right now in their stage, Philly is certainly dominating that area of the country. I think for us, we're a little bit more on an island. But I think, again, there's a nice energy within our club about what we're trying to do on a bigger scale that I find so exciting with the new leadership here and the new kind of just philosophy of how important development is, whether it's within the first team, whether it's in the second team, in the academy, and how those need to integrate for that to happen. I think it's an exciting time, and it's exciting to talk about a team like Philadelphia that has shown in their way, I don't think we'll do it the Philadelphia way, that we can be as successful as them.
Yeah, you kind of answered my question there about what other teams have kind of studied about how Philadelphia operate their academy and how they're so successful bringing those youth through. So it brings me back to Minnesota and their youth academy and bringing Devin Pedelford through, getting his first Major League Soccer start 2 weeks ago against LAFC. How important is it for teams across the league to prove that that pathway is there? It works. It's ready for these kids to utilize in, I guess, recruiting some of these young kids to their academies and getting them through and bringing them forward. And how important is it to roster building? Because obviously there are benefits to bringing through your youth through the academy and through MNUFC too, and bringing them up into the full team.
Oh, it's massive. I mean, listen, Devin last weekend or 2 weekends ago, what a performance he had. Yeah. You know, he was outstanding. Kid from Woodbury, just stepping out there, dealing with some high powered offensive players and really getting stronger as the game went. I couldn't say enough about, you know, being a native Minnesotan, how proud I was for him that night and just helping us get the 3 points. I think it's important, the pathway of just that, but I also think it's important because there's kids that are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 now that I truly hope followed that game, were at that game, found out about that game, and are believing, because there is real work, but you can't have the real work without the belief as well. And these kids need to believe not only that there's a pathway, but that they believe that they can get to the top of the pyramid in that pathway. And so to me, it's just such an exciting time for the country with the next couple of years about where soccer and how many global events are here. And I think it's exciting time for Minnesota United, because like I said, there is a shift here in terms of us really intentionally thinking about not only kids believing, which we're going to work every day to make every kid in Minnesota and every kid recruit for the academy to believe in themselves and believe in the pathway. And then also the real work, roll up your sleeves and helping find the best way to develop them and bring out the best version of themselves to have awesome, you know, potentially first team players.
We were remiss to not acknowledge Loic Masanvi's goal last night against Real Salt or Real Monarchs. Obviously, the end scoreline wasn't the desired effect, but what a goal by Masanvi last night in Utah.
Yeah, no, it's been nice to see him. He's had a nice journey of some really good minutes for the first team. You know, he obviously had a nice contribution in the Open Cup game and the big 2-0 win, 3-0, excuse me, in Chicago. So not quite the result we wanted last night from the scoreline, but I thought the game itself showed we have some really good, nice young talent, and actually the diversity of going down a man early and trying to figure out if we could see the game out, which we almost did, is great for those young guys. It's great for them to have minutes like that and have that kind of adversity early in the season. And it's exciting as you look at our second team, and hopefully we have more fans that want to start following that, because there is going to be way more integration over the years to come, that those players are the future first team players.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wait to see some of those kids rise up through the ranks and get to Minnesota United and see what they can do on the big stage. So let's go back to the game at hand this weekend, Minnesota, Philadelphia. And we've talked quite a bit about what this team could look like once all the injuries are taken care of, all the paperwork's figured out. And now it seems like we're finally getting there. A couple games in, Minnesota on 10 points atop the Western Conference by themselves. It seems like we're going to have everybody. What is a full strength squad look like for the Loons? Who do you see in that squad, and who's coming off the bench in key moments?
Well, again, I think there's a core of guys that from the LAFC game you're excited about. You're excited about the guys who started the season strong and have really, I think, solidified, you know, a belief that we can compete in every game and get points from every game. And then certainly you had guys coming off the bench last game that might end up being starters now. So I think there's a reality that you are getting deeper and deeper. And you're getting guys where, you know, there should be some good debate about who should start and who shouldn't. And ultimately, like, we have a good core of guys, 16, 17, 18 deep, that should contribute and are available to contribute to kind of navigate the diversity of getting a result this weekend. So that's really exciting. And guys should be fitter and fitter each week. When you're coming back from injuries, when you're coming back from international duty, it gets a little chunky for some of the guys who you might have to manage their minutes based on how much they played and their fatigue of traveling. But overall, that's what I just mentioned about. We got a core, hopefully, that can step in now and really be ready, like I said, to compete against one of the toughest environments to play in the league.
By the way, The Athletic putting out their annual randoms or anonymous survey, and Asani Dotson getting mentioned in Love and as one of the, I think, underrated players in the league. Congrats to Asani Dotson there, getting some love early on in that one. Expected, because as we've talked about plenty of times, the importance of him in that midfield has really shown out this season. I thought it really was a really shining moment or shining season last year, coming back from the injury and what he was able to do throughout the season. But he's also had an incredible impact this season, not getting on the score sheet, but what he's been able to do in those moments that really don't show up on the stat sheet. He's been really effective for this squad in the midfield this season.
Yeah, I thought he was the man of the match in the LAFC game. I thought it was his best game and probably since his knee injury. And just to see him kind of continue to grow based after that injury, and really that entire midfield with him and Will and Lode has been really, really tough to handle for teams to really kind of compete against us. So Asani, can't say enough about him. Can't say enough about it every day. He's a true pro now. He's at an age where he understands what he needs to do physically, mentally, every game, and he tends to really give that. And I think it's cool when the team and his peers acknowledge it, because it's genuine. You know, it really is game in and game out. He's ready to fight and battle, and I think teams and players understand that.
Is he going to be one of those guys that we talk about, like the Christian Roldans, Alejandro Bedoyas, who are just so important to those winning teams? They don't get a whole lot of mention, but it feels like if they're not in the squad's going to be a lot lesser without them.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a little bit different. I think Bedoya and Roldan do it a little bit more with cleverness. Yeah. Asani does it with a little bit more physicality, which I kind of love. So it's a little bit different. But yeah, you're going to miss that physicality when he's not in the game. There's no doubt.
So then Reynoso, we don't know if he'll play. We don't know the lineups yet, but we saw him return and make his debut 2 weeks ago against LAFC. That his insertion into the lineup obviously changes things, how they look in that midfield. With him in the lineup, how does that affect the midfield and what they ask? Because what we've seen through the first couple games is a three-man midfield that is up and down the field all game long. Does that mean with Reynoso coming in the lineup, eventually at some point. I would imagine he's going to start here eventually. How does that affect what you ask a Will Trapp, a Robin Lode, a Sonny Dotson to do in that midfield? Do they sit back a little bit deeper because Reynoso's generally not going to track back as far? Or are you going to ask Reynoso to track back just like Robin Lode was doing the past couple weeks and have him play in the midfield? How do you expect that to change things in that midfield? Because as we've talked about throughout the past couple weeks, that midfield's been key to how this team operates and what they've been able to do in hassling teams, especially in this high press. Reynoso's going to change that one way or the other. And it's very interesting. And that's been the key talking point about around this team is how Reynoso fits into this high pressing game style that we've seen over the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think it's TBD, but also I think it's something you should be excited about. I don't think the staff probably looks at it like, you know, it's going to change everything. I think they look at, you know, there's a lot of positions Reynoso could play on the field, whether it's midfield, whether it's wide right, wide left. I mean, I think the values and habits that the players want to try to create to do the style, hopefully he fits in one of those positions and he's ready to do it while he brings these other areas where maybe it makes it easier for us to have the ball more and press and repress more. So to me, I think it's just an exciting time to kind of integrate and build into a high quality player whose habits and values are, I think, aligned with the team. And then the team also elevates all of their kind of skill sets because he's on the field, because he does have those touches in a way to kind of move the ball and go. So it's exciting. It's exciting to say that I don't quite know, because I don't until you see it. But, you know, the reality is I think the group is going to be better as they kind of build that values and habits about how they want to go about winning games.
The especially exciting thing is, and we noticed this right away in that game against LAFC, the amount of attention he draws when he's on the ball in the attacking third. At one point, I remember Dan and I were on the call. We're sitting kind of above the Wonder Wall, and he's got the ball in front of us late in that match. It's on the near sideline, and four LAFC defenders come swarming him. And obviously that's going to leave people open. And we know Emmanuel Reynoso can thread a pass. That's going to be exceptionally exciting to see how he fits into this, considering how this team has already played over the opening couple weeks.
Yeah. Those moments just remind you, and I become a fan like everybody else. There is a reality that there's a handful of players, I think, that played in Minnesota over the years, over the decades, Ace Nsoelengue, Ibsen, Reynoso, where you really take away the win and losing. You have these special players you get to watch live, and it's amazing. And there's just moments that remind you. And Reynoso hadn't played at home yet. And for him to come out and just be on the field, I think it was a nice reminder of the fans about how good he can be and how good his touch is, which is, again, there's a beauty of this sport. There's a romanticism. And something like Reynoso, you know, pulls at those strings in a way that's just like is awesome. It's awesome to see live. It's really cool. And he certainly kind of disrupts the other team because he is that good.
Yeah. And the atmosphere when he came on the field, it upped about 10 notches. The intensity, it felt like from the crowd. It's not like the crowd was ever out of it in that match because how well Minnesota were playing, but it just felt like they got more into it when Reynoso stepped on the field, and that made it even more difficult for an LAFC side that were already struggling with the match. And you like to have that home atmosphere back and see what Allianz Field can do, because we didn't see it a whole lot last year. Obviously, we've already seen it affect teams early on in the first two games, only two home games, another third one coming up next weekend. But you really like the atmosphere notching up a level when Reynoso came off the bench.
I love that you brought that up, John, because I argue about our fan base being one of the most intelligent fan bases in the league. And, you know, you just said you felt that. And again, that's not just about Reynoso coming onto the field. Remember the context of when Reynoso came onto the field, we were up 1-0. Mm-hmm. It's a big moment to see that game out and have him get minutes and have the other subs get minutes. And our fans feel and understand that. You know, this is a shout out to our fan base. I think they're outstanding. I think they understand the complexity of the games more than most markets. And I think they're amazing at it. And I think that elevation is because they want the same thing we all want, which is not only get the win, but to get the win and have some of our players who are coming back from injuries be a part of that moment. So to me, just love the way you put that. Like I said, I think our fan base is really underrated in terms of how they, approach the journey of trying to get to 3 points. To me, they're always integrated in a way that sometimes they're quiet and because the game is like needs to be quiet. And then sometimes they just get after it because the team needs to hear them getting after it. So it's a good call. I really do think we have such an underrated, you know, kind of knowledgeable fan base.
Yeah, it was a fun atmosphere that night, obviously because of what the game meant and who they were playing and how the game was played out and how physical and dominating Minnesota were. But just getting to see Reynoso back on the field, getting to see Bonhukle Hlongwane score another goal off the bench. And obviously we'll see him in the starting lineup at some point. And it'll be exciting to see how defenses try and close down a confident, fast, pacey Sungbin Jung on one side, and then Bonhukle Hlongwane, who's got that physicality. He's got the creative touch. He's got the speed as well on the other side with Reynoso pinging balls left and right and Timu Pukki up top. That's a tough task for any defense, even if they've been together for years upon years like Philadelphia's has.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again, I think I mentioned that to you. I don't think this is a game where we just say, like, we're going to battle and limit chances and see how we do. I think we've got to get after them. I think we got to battle, limit chances, limit our mistakes, but then we have to show, you know, what we are. And again, a credit to those guys, a credit to Pukki the last couple of games. I think he's been outstanding, his movement and work rate. Certainly Bongi's been, you know, a force off the bench. And Sangbin has just given us that vertical, like kind of over the top that we need to sometimes stretch teams that we didn't have last year. And his movement has been outstanding to start the year. He really has reminded people that we are always going to be looking in to get over the top, or he's going to be looking into running behind with the ball. So it's been a great start for those guys this season in terms of how they're navigating, trying to get chances and create chances and remind teams that, you know, it's not going to be one-way traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, Sungbin Jung stood out the most out of a lot of standout performances. He stood out the most, and it seems like he's a completely different player from what we saw last year. And I'm excited to see him again coming up this weekend. I'm excited to see the Loons back in action after a week off. Minnesota United take on Philadelphia 1 p.m. Central Time this Saturday. Early kickoff for many of us. 12:30 p.m. pre-match show on Score North, 1500 ESPN. You can watch the match on Apple TV. Manny, good talking to you this week. Excited to see the game, and we'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Cheers.
Cheers, Manny. Thank you, Loons listeners. We'll be back next week, and thank you to the producing staff of Grace Dearson, Kyle Hayward, and Evan Entler for putting this all together. We'll talk to you next week, Loons fans.